Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Chatham Community Church. My name is Jaime. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm so glad to see y'all here this morning. Let me join Lindsay in extending a warm welcome to those of you who are guests, whether it's your first time or it's been a while. We're so glad that you're here with us today, and I'd love to say hi to you at the end of the service, so I'm going to be just outside of the exit doors. Come say hi. I'd love to hear your name, a little bit about how you found us and what your experience was like this morning. Make sure you get one of our welcome gifts. Also, just want to add my words of invitation to the baptism. It'll be at the end of the second service, so you have ample time to go do some grocery shopping and come back and be here just at around 11:30. Yes, 11:30. And we'll be able to celebrate. We're having two members of our youth group who are getting baptized, so we want to celebrate that. Absolutely. Bless the Lord. If you were here a few weeks ago, as we prayed to send the kids to camp, we prayed that God would bear the kind of fruit he's born out of these conference experience, these camp experience for them, where we've seen baptisms come on the other side of that, and we are seeing that today. So thank you for all of you who supported our kids in getting to camp, whether you bought burritos or took one of those envelopes or prayed or simply encouraged them along the way. We are celebrating the fruit that God has brought from that, so thank you for that. And also, once again, really important if you can make it next week to come to the congregational meeting. It'll be a helpful time for all of us together to get a sense of where we're at in these processes. We want to hear from you. The Lord has used you throughout this process to bring ideas, to give feedback, to bring insight and creativity, and so this is another installment to that. So once again, we'll have the service at our normal 9 o'clock service. We'll take the vote for the budget at the end of that, and then we will transition into the family meeting. And if you think, how are we going to fit two services into this space, don't worry, there will be more chairs next week. So it'll be, if you've been here for one of our holidays, major holidays, the layout will be similar to that. But come join us as you're able. There's a show that recently premiered called Stick. And for the sake of those who I know you're here, who hate it when I do this, I'm just going to say, nothing that I say about this show in the next few minutes cannot be found in the trailer. It's in the trailer or the first few minutes of the first episode. So I'm not spoiling anything. I can't because I've only seen the first episode, all right? So you don't need to plug your ears. You know who I'm talking to. You know who you are. In this show, Owen Wilson plays Price Cahill. Price Cahill is a former professional golfer who had a really promising career. He seemed to be one of those next superstars of golf, and then it all washes out when he has a very public meltdown during a tournament on the PGA Tour. And he's sort of lost his way since. He's still connected somewhat to golf. He works at a pro shop, and he also, you know, does a little bit of coaching of retirees at the local golf course and driving range, but his life is not turning out like it seemed like it would. He seems very much stuck in his life. And then one day when he's on the course giving coaching to one of these retirees, he hears something. He hears the sound of a club hitting a ball, and you might say, he's on a golf course, duh. Of course he's going to hear that sound. He hears that sound every time he's on the golf course, but there's something different about that sound. As soon as he hears it, he perks up, and his ear sort of turns to where the sound is, and he excuses himself from the person he is coaching, and he makes his way towards the source of that sound. He has to go check it out, and the sound he finds comes from the swing of a 17-year-old boy, and this boy is clearly gifted at golf, and something sparks in Price as he stands and watches this kid swing the club and hit the ball. He senses that there's an opportunity, that this kid could use some coaching, that this kid could use some mentoring, and that he might go far. He senses that in this encounter, there's an opportunity that could change both their lives, which I'm assuming is how the rest of the show develops, and I'll let you know once I watch it. Friends, sometimes life change happens in the midst of extraordinary circumstances. Things are happening that are completely out of the ordinary, and most of us in those moments are aware that something could change. But sometimes life-changing encounters happen in the midst of what could be otherwise characterized as an ordinary day, except it's one of those ordinary days where something stands out and catches our attention. And if we pay attention, we could have the kind of day that could change our lives forever. All summer, we're talking about life change here at Chatham Community Church. We're talking about the kind of life change that happens when we encounter the God who made us, the God who loves us, the God who saves us, the God who has purpose for us, and the God who is shaping us to be the kind of people he made us to be. People that make a difference in this world, a difference for good. And we're studying passages throughout the scriptures that could prepare us for those types of encounters or recognize the circumstances that set up those kinds of encounters. Recognize if we're already in the midst of one of those encounters or one is just along the way. Now, there are times when those encounters with God happen in the midst of extraordinary circumstances. It is very clear if we have eyes for God that God is up to something, but sometimes they happen in the midst of an ordinary day or an ordinary week or an ordinary month, maybe an ordinary year. But God makes something that would otherwise be ordinary stand out. He makes it stand out so it could get our attention, so it could draw us to him, that we might experience the next step or the next installment in the kinds of encounters that shape us into becoming the people he made us to be. And that's how today's passage starts. So before we dive into this passage, this scene from Moses' life, take stock of your last few days, or maybe your last few weeks, your last few months, maybe the last year. Is there something that stands out? Maybe it's an ordinary thing, but for some reason, it's just sticking out in the last few days, weeks, months, or years. Has there been something that for some reason is catching your attention? And begin to ask whether that's God trying to get your attention and whether it might be time for an encounter with him today. Now, I've said this every week, and I'll likely say it most weeks of this series. We're looking at lots of different types of encounters. So for some of you, today's story might not resonate. It might not be the shape that your encounter with God takes. If that's the case, the invitation that I've said every week is pray for the people for whom the story is resonating. Pray for the people for whom today is the day of encounter, that they might encounter God today. The story that connects with you might be next week, and we'll invite them to pray for you then as well. When we first encounter Moses in this passage, he's tending his father-in-law's flock, his flock of sheep. This seems like a very ordinary thing to be doing, and in some ways it is an ordinary thing to be doing, but it's not such an ordinary thing for Moses to be doing, because this is not where his life was supposed to go. This is not where his life was headed. If you look at the trajectory of Moses' life from the beginning and where it was headed, and you see where he's ended up here tending the flock of his father-in-law, you get the sense that somehow along the way Moses has lost his way, because he's ended up where no one would have expected him to be, where he could not have predicted he would end up. He's gone from being in the center or near the center of power in Egypt, the most, if not one of the most powerful kingdoms in the world, in the known world at that time, a prince. He's gone from that to the middle of nowhere, far, far away from Egypt. He tried to make a difference while he was in Egypt. He tried to do something good. He tried to effect change for the enslaved Hebrews, but his efforts had crashed and burned, and he'd had to run from that life. Run far and away from that life. And now he seems resigned to live that life, to leave that dream, to leave that hope, that aspiration, that desire to make a difference behind. It seems long forgotten as he tends the sheep that day. He seems done with that. But God doesn't seem to be done with Moses. I wonder if there are any of us here today who've had dreams to do something good, to make a difference, to effect change, that maybe fell apart along the way. Maybe our efforts didn't prove to be quite enough. Maybe they couldn't get us there. Or maybe we always had those dreams, but just never got started. We never took the first step, and maybe now we feel like it might be too late to even take a first step. Could it be that as you're here today, God might be saying to you also, I'm not done with you. And we're not done with that. Could it be that he's inviting you to that type of encounter today? Friends, a burning bush might not have been a daily occurrence in Moses' life at that time, but it was also not such an unexpected thing. We're in the desert, after all. Dryness and fires are not uncommon. This might not be the first time that Moses see a plant catch fire. But what catches his attention on that day is not so much that there is a burning bush, but that as he notices the burning bush, he realizes that the burning bush is not being consumed. I asked us to look back on the last few weeks, days, months, and maybe year to see if there was anything that was catching your attention in the midst of the routine. I wonder if now I can ask you to take another pass at that and see if God might be trying to get your attention. If there's something in the midst of that routine that just seems out of the ordinary, that just seems to make that routine stand out. Now, you may not be seeing a burning bush that is unconsumed. If you are, I would love to hear about that. It'd be a cool story. But perhaps there's been a song that just keeps coming on the radio or on your app, or every time you step into a place, or it just keeps coming up. Maybe there's a memory that pops up unexpectedly over and over again, a thought that keeps coming into your mind. Perhaps there's a person that you just keep running into, or someone keeps mentioning, different people keep mentioning, you keep hearing about, they keep coming to mind. Maybe there's a passage in Scripture that shows up from different sources, all in the span of a short period of time. Maybe there's some other type of sound or smell or sight or thing that keeps inviting you to stop and pay attention and notice. There may be other ways that God is looking to get your attention, but think back. How might God be looking to grab hold of your attention in the midst of your routine? And do you find yourself even open to that? Do you find yourself open to God's interruptions and interventions? Do you find yourself being open to attend to God saying, hey, over here, look at this? How are you responding to them? What step are you taking after you notice that peculiar thing? Moses does something. He doesn't go about the rest of his day. He stops and examines. He pays attention. He doesn't chalk it up to coincidence. He doesn't say, a burning bush that isn't being consumed. That's interesting. And just walks away to tell his wife and his father-in-law. He responds with curiosity. He stops and then he draws near to see what's going on. He checks it out. Friends, when God looks to get your attention, it's usually an invitation to draw near. It's not just something to notice from afar. It's God's way of saying, come, we've got something to deal with. We've got something to talk about. There is something afoot. Again, how are you responding? Or how do you usually respond to God's attention-getting efforts? You may be in a place where you don't even notice them. Pray. Pray for eyes to see, ears to hear, a sensitive heart, a mind that's aware. God will give you those things. If you have noticed them or are noticing them, that's a great first step, but know that it doesn't end there. It doesn't end there. Resist the urge to chalk those things up to coincidence, a funny story that you can tell in the future. Now, there may be some situations that are coincidental, but for the sake of those that aren't, slow down enough to explore. Slow down enough to examine. And if you've noticed that God is doing something, that God has his hand in it, go deeper than simply saying, how nice that God is bringing that up. That's a great thing to say, but go deeper. Draw near, because sometimes an encounter with God that can change our life is on the other side of being willing to stop, to notice, and to draw near. That's what Moses does. And as he draws near, he hears a voice. He hears his name called out by God. Now remember, Moses has come to this region fleeing from who he is. He's come to this region to be unknown. If you looked at a map and located where Egypt is versus where he's currently at, it is an incredible distance for him to have traversed. He is clearly looking to not be found and not be known. He's left the life in Egypt behind. He has left that Moses behind, but God still sees him. God still knows him. God remembers, and God's not done with him. And Moses responds to God speaking his name. He doesn't run away. Moses responds to God speaking the name of a man who wouldn't have wanted to be found and wouldn't have wanted to be known and wouldn't have wanted to be recognized. And he responds with three powerful words. Here I am. And makes it clear that as he continues to draw near to this unconsumed bush, he's not just curious, but he's open. He's open and he is available to the God who speaks his name, the God who knows him and who likely knows his stories. As you draw near to God, come with openness. Come with your availability. Come with some initial willingness to listen to what this God might have to say, to why he might be looking to get your attention, to why he might be making this passage show up in your life multiple times, or this person come up in your memories or in conversation, or this song keep coming up in the radio, or whatever else he's doing to get your attention. Come with some willingness to attend. Come with some willingness to engage. Let God meet you. Let God meet you in that as the encounter develops. Now, we don't know that Moses has done much processing of what happened in Egypt. In fact, in later conversations, it becomes very clear that he still got a significant amount of baggage about what happened. But what he's willing to do in that moment is he's willing to say, "Here I am." He's willing to be open. He's willing to be available. It's going to become very clear that he doesn't think he's ready for what God is going to send him to. But note that God doesn't need him to be. At this juncture, all that God is looking for is his openness and his availability. And he's willing to give that to God. And God receives it. Could you do something similar today? As God is trying to get your attention, as God might be drawing you near to some maybe long-forgotten dream, or maybe a dream you think is too far off, can you give God your "Here I am"? Because he can do a lot with that. A number of years ago, I was fairly new in an organization that put on conferences, and in those conferences, they would have speakers, keynote speakers, that would speak for a whole week. And there was a significant crew of people who would communicate at these conferences, and I was new to the organization, fairly young, and way more inexperienced and untrained than I am now, and I still have a long way to go. But early on in my career there, it just so happened that a number of the people who were regular communicators at these conferences were unavailable, and I heard people had taken a leave, or people weren't going to be present, or for different reasons, people just weren't available, and they were looking to see who they might recruit. And so I contacted my second line manager, that's my boss's boss, and I sent him an email. I talked to my boss before I did this, but I sent him an email, and I said, "Hey, I heard that this is going on. You may not be aware that I do a little bit of speaking, and I know I'm new to the organization, and there's probably a few more people that are ahead of me. But in case the bench is seeming a little bit light as this conference approaches, I just want you to know that I'm available. I just want to throw my hat in the ring." This person had never heard me speak. I hadn't developed a lot of credibility in the organization. But he was so moved by my willingness to be available. I didn't ask, I didn't demand, I simply said, "I just want you to know that I'm here," that he gave me a shot. I can tell you, I did okay. I was nowhere near the standard that we needed to be for those conferences. But that put me on a trajectory of development, it put me on a trajectory of growth, and it opened the door to lots and lots of opportunities, simply because I said something along the lines of, "Here I am." Now, I know I'm not the only one who has a here I am story from the professional context or from the relationship context or from the educational context. And we know that those here I am stories don't always go well. Sometimes we crash and burn. Sometimes we get rejected. Sometimes it doesn't go well. But if we can recognize that even in the midst of the risk of it going poorly, sometimes that openness and availability can open doors to unique opportunities to do significant good. If we can recognize that that's true in our day-to-day, how much more might they do in the context of our relationship with God? The God who loves us. The God who is good, the God who made us, the God who knows us. How much more might our here I am do there? God can do a lot with our here I am. Might you be willing to give him yours today? For Moses, the here I am opens the door. It opens the door to recapturing a long thought lost dream, a mission. The rekindling of something that was lost and that he thought forgotten. And he's not even sure he wants to re-engage with that. He's not really sure he wants to re-engage with leading a people into freedom. God starts the dialogue with Moses about this by saying that he's seen a need. He's heard a cry and he is going to act. And you can imagine Moses tracking with this up to that point. He's like, all right, yeah. Yeah, the people are oppressed. Yeah, I'm glad you heard the need. Oh, I'm glad you're going to do something. Because he had seen that need when he was in Egypt. And he had heard those cries when he's in Egypt. And he had tried to do something. And it had backfired. And Moses went from prince of Egypt to shepherd in the middle of nowhere. It's about time God does something. Surely, he'll have a better go at it than Moses, right? Maybe that's what Moses is thinking. And how thoughtful that God thinks of coming to Moses to let him know. Because Moses is now unconnected to all that's going on in Egypt. So how thoughtful that before God goes and frees the people, he let Moses know, hey, Moses, you know that thing you cared about and tried to do and fail? I'm going to take care of it now. Moses might be thinking, this is great. And then God sort of turns the story, the tables on Moses a little bit, and says, I want you to go. I want you to go and be part of this. I am sending you to do this work. And Moses isn't having it, at least not at first. He puts up roadblock after roadblock, question after question, resistance after resistance. You ever tried to do something good and it blow up in your face? It's hard to go back to it, isn't it? It's hard to try again because this is his place of failure. This is his place of disappointment. He had cared. He had given his heart to caring. He had tried to do something, and it backfired, and he'd been chased out. His life had been lost. Why would anything be different now? Because of PEMDAS, at least in a way. Now, you may be saying, what did Jaime just say? What Hebrew or Greek word is that? Well, I said PEMDAS. It's not a Greek word. It's not a Hebrew word. It's an acronym. Let me show you. PEMDAS is an acronym to remember the order of operations so that when you encounter a mathematical problem, you know what steps to follow in order to get the right result. You can follow different steps than PEMDAS says, and you can get a result. But if you get the order of operations wrong, the result you'll get will be the wrong one. Moses' desire in Egypt had been good. His noticing of injustice had been good. His caring about eradicating injustice had been good. His later on wanting to keep the peace among Hebrew people who were arguing and fighting with one another had been good. And yet God didn't seem to be anywhere in the picture for Moses at that time. And so the results of his efforts had not been good. His order of operations was not right. He'd forgotten the God factor. He'd forgotten to factor God in. And what God is doing now is rearranging the order of operations for Moses. He's rearranging them so they can get the right result, so that people can be set free, so that a people can come to the land that was promised to them, to get the result of getting Moses back on course. Could there be places where you're not getting the expected result right now? the expected result of what feels like a genuinely good desire, a genuinely good desire or dream or longing to effect some change, to do some good work. Could it be that you've neglected the God factor? Or could it be that you've neglected to factor God in appropriately? Maybe it's time for a rearranging of the order of operations in order to take those genuinely good desires and actually end up with a good result, which is what should come. Moses responds to God's invitation with a question. He starts with, "Who am I?" As in, if I couldn't do this when I was the prince of Egypt, how am I going to do it as a disgraced fugitive 40 years later? He goes from here I am to who am I like that. And that's when you know that God is getting to something here in Moses. That's when you know we're getting to the real deal. That's when you know there's work to be done. That's when you know that this is where the rearranging also needs to happen in Moses' heart. And over the next chapter or so, Moses and God are going to go back and forth. Moses is going to put roadblocks up, and God is going to continue to rearrange and reframe how these things are going to get done. All of it seems to find its way back to how God responds to Moses' question. Because when Moses asks, "Who am I?" God doesn't tell him who he is. God responds, "I will be with you." That's God's response to Moses' "Who am I?" God responds to that question from Moses with a promise of his presence. See, it's not about who Moses is. It's not about how he, who he is going to help get things done. It's about how God is sending him and how God is going to be with him. He builds on that idea in the back and forth with Moses. The I that says, "I will be with you," gets developed. The I that will be with Moses is a God of covenant. There are promises that he is going to come through on, that he is going to fulfill. He has a consistency of character that he is going to deliver on. And he has a power that can overcome any obstacle that he is going to bring to bear in the face of one of the most, if not the most powerful empire in the region. That is the I that is saying, "I will be with you." And that is also the I that says, "I will be with you," to you and to you and to you. And to me, and to all of us. God knows Moses. God knows Moses' strengths. God knows Moses' weakness. God knows all the reasons why Moses is not the right person to send on this job. God is not suddenly going to transform Moses into a superhero who would be capable of doing all this thing on his own. But he is going to be with him. And that is going to make the difference. Things are going to be rearranged in Moses, and the end result is going to be good. Maybe you've asked a question, like Moses, at some point when faced with an invitation from God. Maybe you've said to God, "Who am I? What about my past? What about my limitations? What about my failures? What about my fears? What about, what about, what about, and what about? God, are you sure you want me for this?" God knows us. God knows you and you and you. God knows me. He knows our strengths. He knows our weaknesses. He knows our failures. He knows our limitations. He knows all the reasons why it would be logical for us not to be sent on these things. And God says, "I will be with you," when he calls us. And that is going to make the difference. Let the rearranging of the order of operations happen in your heart. And happen in how you go about these things. That the I in the I will be with you is the one that goes first, the one that sends, and the one that goes with us. Because if you do, the end result can't help but be good. Just before the Montgomery bus protest started, which was a key point in the civil rights movement, Dr. Martin Luther King was sitting at his kitchen table late one night or early one morning, depending on how you count the evenings. He'd been receiving death threats in the days leading up. These threats were not just threats on his life, they were threats on his family's life. And as he was in his home with his kids and his wife, he found he couldn't sleep thinking about those threats and the potential danger they were all in. He got up, he went to the kitchen, he poured brewed a cup of coffee and sat at the table. It seemed like the weight of everything was sitting on his shoulders. He felt at the end of what he had to give. His inner resources were depleted. He didn't know if he could go on. He prayed. And part of what he prayed was this. He said, "Lord, I'm down here trying to do what's right. The good desire is there." He said, "I think I'm right. I think the cause we represent is right. But Lord, I must confess that I'm weak now. I'm faltering. I'm losing my courage." And this is how Dr. King reports what happened next. I'm going to read his own words. He says, "At that moment, I experienced the presence of the divine as I had never experienced him. It seemed as though I could hear the quiet assurance of an inner voice saying, 'Stand up for righteousness. Stand up for truth. God will be at your side forever.' Almost at once, my fears passed from me. My uncertainty disappeared. I was ready to face anything. The outer situation remained the same. But God had given me inner calm." Notice that it's the promise of presence that the one who is making that promise that makes a difference in Dr. King's life and ultimately makes a difference in the civil rights movement. Friends, Moses had all sorts of reasons not to go. You may have those as you encounter God. Or you may have already started going and are feeling the weight of the resistance and your sense of inadequacy, like Dr. King may have been. Maybe you're feeling like it's too much. God meets all of that and all of us today with the same word: "I will be with you." That "I will be with you" is loaded with the weight of his presence, his character, his promises, and his power. It's loaded with the love demonstrated in Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. Nothing can overcome that. Nothing can stand in the way of the God that says, "I will be with you." So today, give him your availability. Today, give him your attention. Today, be open to the encounter. Give him your trust. Go where he sends and goes with you. Go. Go trusting in God, standing on his promise, depending on his power, and abiding in his presence. Go. Let's pray. Gracious God, thank you. Thank you that you send us not on our own, but you go with us. You go with us. You go with us. Lord, I pray for those of us here who have acknowledged that you've gotten our attention. Lord, as we hear the invitation, and as the sense of inadequacy may come up, or the sense of shame, or the sense of grief may come up, may we hear your comforting word, "I will be with you." May we hear that word loaded with your promise, loaded with your compassion, loaded with your presence. And Lord, may we give ourselves to that which you call us to. Lord, as we encounter you today, change us and send us for the sake of the good that you've called us to, that you want to bring about in our lives, in our communities, in our world. In Jesus' name, amen.